Hello there, and welcome to Rhys Rambles, my weekly wrap-up of all the retro tech and retro gaming news from the previous week that, yeah, it's tickled my fancy, but that perhaps hasn't quite warranted its own video for whatever reason. Hope you're all having a wonderful weekend. I, of course, am Rhys from the YouTube channel Control.Rhys. This goes out on my second channel and all of the podcast platforms. But I think without further ado, let's dive into our very first story of the week. And I'm going to set the scene a bit. I'm going to give a bit of background story because I know I have quite a few international viewers and listeners. And this kind of predominantly talks about a particularly British thing, a particularly shared history that we have here in the UK to do with gaming and all of that. And so let me introduce you to a chap called Dominic Diamond. Now, Dominic Diamond is he's a tech journalist. I think it's fair to say gaming journalist, writes for all the big newspapers, occasionally appears on TV, rants a lot on Twitter about football. And yeah, here he is in his prime back in the 90s presenting the one thing that I think we all probably remember him best for and the one thing that we all love him the most for, which was Games Master, a long-running TV series on Channel 4 all about gaming, believe it or not. I think kind of mostly aimed at children, although yeah, it seemed a lot of the guests and kind of the competitors on the show were children, but I'm sure it was popular with young adults and all sorts as well. And he has gone on to enjoy a prestigious career writing all about games, and most recently about retro games, because, well, let's face it, it's kind of what he knows best, because it's what he did back in the day. And he has written this story, which has just dropped this morning on The Guardian, come up on everyone's radar, about the Amiga, my undying love for the painfully uncool Amiga. Now, you would think that, just to give you a little bit of backstory on myself as well, you'll all know that I'm a big Atari fan, and that kind of somewhat started with the Atari ST, which we got back in 1991. We got the STE, which was kind of the enhanced version of the ST. And, of course, that was the big competitor to the Amiga, and there was this supposed big playground rivalry, and we're all supposed to hate each other. And I don't remember any of that from school. I just remember going around each other's houses and kind of playing the games and having a good time. But I thought I'd point that out because some people might find it a bit strange that I would kind of go to bat for the Amiga with that in mind. But no, I think this is a bit out of order, actually. Saying the Amiga is uncool, I don't think it's uncool at all. I think it was a very cool machine. It had some really awesome games, really sort of sophisticated graphics and sound and stuff. And, you know, I think any kind of Mega Drive or SNES owner back in the day would have been quite impressed with what the old Amiga could do. Plus, you could also do your homework on it. So, yeah, they're always popular with the parents. And, yeah, ultimately, that's why we ended up with the Atari ST rather than a games console. So, anyway, in this story in The Guardian, and it's a very short little article here, but still an interesting read. He talks about stuff like the ZX Spectrum and the Mega Drive, and goes on to talk about the Nintendo consoles, and of course how they were kind of the cool ones, the cool kids who all had the Nintendo consoles back in the day. And then he goes on to talk about some more slightly more modern stuff. There's a really great paragraph in here. If you talk to an owner of any Nintendo machine, from a Game Boy to a Switch OLED, they sound like Romeo talking about Juliet, Meredith Grey talking about Derek Shepherd. Don't quite get that reference, if someone could explain that to me in the comments. Or Elon Musk talking about himself. Yeah. But goes on to talk about how he had the Amiga and that made him one of the uncool kids. And I don't think that's fair. I think that's a little bit unfair on the old Amiga. I think it was a great machine. Not one that I have much nostalgia for or much of a personal connection to, other than the kind of playing on friends' machines back in the day. But yeah, interesting little story, and I thought it would be a good opener for this week's Ramble. So go check that out. All the stories that I cover in the Rambles, of course, are linked in the usual places down in the description and in the show notes, which hopefully carry through to your podcast platform. I know they come up on Spotify. I'm not quite sure if everyone gets those. But anyway, yes, with that out of the way and the ice broken, let's move on to the next story. Now, speaking of those wonderful, heady, nostalgic days of 90s gaming, and indeed my own personal experience of that era, another game it came up on my radar this week that actually has some news, which is really bizarre because I thought it was a franchise that had been abandoned a very long time ago, but very welcome news because it was a huge part of my childhood. And I quite often talk about our very first PC and the story of how we got that back in 1994 and how that had Doom installed on it and how I spent most of Christmas just playing through that shareware episode of Doom over and over again. Of course, it's a story I've covered a couple of times on the channel and I'm sure you're probably sick to death of it. But little piece of information for you that you might not be aware of. Of course, that wasn't the only thing on that PC. There were other games installed on there as well. Now, one that was on there that I've since developed a huge nostalgic love for, but particularly in particular an association with that time of year, is Jazz Jackrabbit. And yeah, there's some news about Jazz Jackrabbit this week. And now, Jazz Jackrabbit was made by Epic Mega Games before they became Epic Games and made that horrible Epic Launcher thing that they're known for nowadays, and Fortnite and all of that. This was kind of their roots. I know they did games before this and games after this. Jazz Jackrabbit, it was the PC's answer to Sonic the Hedgehog and Mario and all of that stuff, an attempt at a kind of a PC mascot platformer. And it was bloody brilliant. It was a fantastic game. The music in it was absolutely stunning. Great sound effects, really sort of fast, fluid movement, great weapons in it, great enemies. It was just, great level design. The whole thing as a complete package was just a great game. And then they went on to release Jazz Jackrabbit 2, which is one that I'm not quite as familiar with, but I think is just as loved and has a two-player mode, which this never did. But as a kid, I didn't really have any friends, so one player was perfectly fine for me. And this came installed on our first PC way back in 1994, that 486 DX266. We had the Gravis gamepad, which was by far the best way to play this game, giving that authentic console experience. Now, why am I talking about Jazz Jackrabbit, 30 years on? Well, the reason is that there has been a community patch released for it. And it's kind of about as official as it gets, because this is on GOG, GOG.com, of course, great platform for buying all these old games nicely packaged up with DOSBox and everything that you need to be able to run them. And this isn't the first patch that's been released by this community. So back in 2021, 27 years after the game was new, somebody released a patch that fixed various bugs in the original game. Things that have been broken since the very beginning that just kind of got forgotten about, because of course online updates weren't a thing back in the 90s. And yeah, November 2021, so we got this, fixed some quite major bugs. Issue that made it nearly impossible to finish Orbitus 2, which is one of the chapters, or one of the levels, should I say. Issues with the hoverboard and episode preview images being the wrong way around, and you can actually fire the cannons on the battleship and stuff like that. Stuff that's been broken for a very long time. And then the same community members came back 3 years later to release an even bigger patch for the CD version of Jazz Jackrabbit and Holiday Hair 95, which was the Christmas-themed levels that Epic did for the game back in 1995. And there's loads of fixes in here for various bugs in various levels. Little things like incorrect sprites for things, and much bigger things like levels that were pretty much almost broken to the point where they were almost impossible to complete. And so cool to see this. I mean, it says here, Jazz Jackrabbit 1 turns 30 years old on August the 1st. So yeah, it would have been brand new when we got it on that first PC back in 94, wouldn't it? That's interesting. Perhaps I should do something for the anniversary in August. I know Clint from LGR is a massive fan of this series as well. So Clint, if you are watching or listening, maybe you should do something for August. Let me know so we don't tread on each other's toes. Cool thing, and if you own the GOG version of this game, you can download those two patches and you can fix all of those various issues, which is fantastic to see. It's a game that's kind of long overdue for a remaster. We're getting lots of remasters of old 90s first-person shooters and stuff, aren't we? But maybe we should start on some PC platformers and some other sort of well-loved PC classics. I appreciate packaged up with DOSBox, a very nice way to play the game. And of course, you can play it on Mister and various other, RetroArch and other kind of DOS emulating platforms. But anything that makes people's lives easier. Give it a re-release on the consoles, stuff like that. Epic, do it. You still exist. Surely you still own this franchise. Stop churning out rubbish Fortnite collabs with rappers that I haven't heard of, and bring Jazz Jackrabbit back to the world. It's what we deserve. So if you're a regular rambler, you'll no doubt know that I also like to talk a little bit about myself in these things and about my own YouTube channel, my latest releases and how well things are doing, or otherwise, in the case of a video that I'm going to be talking about in a second. But let's start with the good news, and that is something that went out on the second channel 4 days ago. And that was a video all about this lovely thing, which is the Funny Playing FPGBC, an FPGA-based Game Boy Color, which is built with its entirely new parts, brand new shell, brand new motherboard, brand new screen, no original Game Boy parts in this whatsoever. And it's FPGA-based, and it was like 80 quid for the kit, which is ridiculous for what you get. Highly recommend this to everyone. I bought this with my own money for my own personal use. I've been absolutely itching to get this built over the past couple of weeks since it arrived, and I was here at the studio the other day and I thought, no, I've got to build it because I want to play with this thing. So that's what I did. Hit record on the camera, record the process, and recorded a quick test, quick firmware update, all of that kind of stuff. And this video has actually done really, really well for this channel, for the second channel. I will have a look at the stats. If you haven't checked that out, go and check it out. Of course, it will be linked along with everything else. It's had 1,300 views in the past 4 days, which is 763 more than usual, apparently. So that's good to see. I've gained a load of subscribers as well because I posted that as a community post over on the main channel, just pointing it out to people who might not be familiar with this channel, with my rambles. And look, I've made £3.66 in advertising revenue on that as well. So well on its way to... I can't even say that with a straight face, can I? Well on its way to paying for itself. Hey, if I ever did accounts on this channel and actually worked out how much it was costing me, I probably wouldn't do it. But that's why it's a hobby and not a job. But yeah, great to see that video doing well on the second channel. Very much a second channel video. A kind of unstructured, unscripted, a kind of more laid back format that I like doing. And speaking of those kind of videos, of course, I was talking last week about how I'd put out what was originally going to be a second channel video on the main channel. And that was the one all about my Doom collection and the poster, which you could probably see behind me. Now I've slightly changed my recording setup for these rambles. And yeah, perhaps releasing that one on the main channel was a bit of a mistake. Regular viewers are choosing to watch this video less often than usual, contributing to 45% fewer views. 2,400, which apparently is 1,900, less than usual. So, hey, you win some, you lose some, just a bit of an experiment, and I'll know in future to stick to the kind of the PC stuff and the more technical stuff, the more in-depth scripted history stuff, and the things that tend to do well on the main channel. But hey, that's why I have a second channel, so I can make those, I can make those videos about the stuff that I just want to do a quick thing about and not worry too much about how well it's going to do. Bit of an experiment putting that on the main channel, and yeah, didn't do well. But hey, it was a good video to make, and the people that did watch it enjoyed it a lot, so certainly not a loss there. But talking about, one thing that is quite often a concern when we put out a video on a YouTube channel is that it will kill off the performance of previous videos, because YouTube will just take your latest video and start pushing that and kind of kill off the older ones. And it seems that's very much not the case just lately, which is great, because my two previous desk videos, I've got the original Doom on a desk video, which is where I actually went to that community centre and picked it up and cleaned it up and installed Doom on it, as you do. 8,400 views so far. I can't remember the date that went out. Since published. Does that say 4th of April there? Yeah, that sounds about right. 8,400 views since then, which is 1,400 more than usual, which is fantastic. You can see on the graph there that it's flying high. And speaking of flying high, of course, there was the follow-up to that, which is... which is this one where I actually put the original Windows 2000 hard drive back in it and got into some of the original user accounts and checked out their files and things, as well as doing a bit more kind of PC maintenance stuff, replacing some capacitors and fixing some noisy fans and all that stuff that I think people like to tune in for. At 19,000 views, 11,400 more than usual. That's since the 14th, so that's 12 days ago, just under 2 weeks ago. 2.5 times more than usual. And I talked a little bit about the money that these videos had made last week, and let's just keep a bit of a running total, shall we? So this one's made £51.64. Bear in mind the desk cost me 30 plus half a day plus whatever the fuel cost me to get to Birmingham and back. And the other one's made £19.97. So yeah, I think that's quite healthy, isn't it? That's like 70 quid that video's made. That's like £40 profit. So yeah, perhaps all that talk about the channel being unprofitable was unwarranted. But that's not why I do this. Like I say, I just want to reiterate that. I make videos on stuff that I enjoy and that I like to share with people. And, I hope that other people out there enjoy them. And they certainly seem to do that. But it is always quite gratifying when one does particularly well. So I just wanted to talk about those. But anyway, that's enough about me. Let's get back to the old, uh, back to the old news. Now, my next story is something that might seem a little bit outside of the usual remit for this channel, but actually, when you start to dig into it, it's computers, it's hardware, it's software, and it's indeed very old. Very, very old. In fact, probably older than, apart from maybe the Atari 2600 or, you know, those original Pong machines, it's older than anything I've covered on my channel. So I think it definitely warrants talking about something I've been very interested in and something I've been following since as long as I can remember. I mean, this thing launched 7 years before I was born. And I'm, of course, I won't keep you waiting any longer. I'm, of course, talking about Voyager, and specifically Voyager 1. So back in 1977, NASA launched these two space probes, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, and they both went slightly different routes through the solar system, taking pictures of planets and taking measurements and all that cool stuff. And then they sent them off out into space, into interstellar space, and they are indeed the most distant man-made items from Earth as we speak. And unless we can build something that that travels much, much faster than these things, it's going to be a very long time before anything breaks that record because, they've got like a 50-year head start. And, yeah, one of them broke, unfortunately. Voyager 1 broke back in November of last year, stopped sending back science data, which is quite unfortunate. And they basically managed to diagnose it. I mean, this thing is, it actually says here in this story, this thing is 15 billion miles or 24 billion kilometers from Earth, and it takes near enough 24 hours for a radio signal to actually reach it. And then it takes the same time for a radio signal to come back from it. So, of course, when they're trying to diagnose these issues, they've got to send a signal out. They've got to wait for it to process or do whatever it does at that end. And then they've got to wait for it to come back. And then they've got to process it at this end to try and work out what they're dealing with. And this is all ancient computer technology. And yeah, actually managed to diagnose it. Not only diagnose the problem, but actually fix it and come up with a workaround, which they've now sent out the new code to work around this issue. And it's running on the probe, and it's fixed it. And what they've essentially done is there was a faulty RAM chip that was storing this data, and they've managed to split the data into multiple parts and store it in different chips and basically send it back in multiple parts. And then it's reassembled at this end, and they've still got the science data. Because, of course, when these things first launched, they had a lot more kind of instrumentation and cameras and things on them, which has since been turned off to conserve power and all the rest of it. So yeah, really good news this in the world of science, in the world of engineering. Great to see these things still going, still trucking on. Like I say, they were launched in 1977, so it's pretty incredible stuff. And some people here celebrating a picture of the actual moment when they got the first fixed, reconstructed signal back. So I thought that was a cool story. I know I don't usually cover space stuff on Rhys Rambles, but like I say, it's a feel-good story and a great bit of engineering. And so that brings us on to my regular video of the week feature. And this is a video that's either been recommended to me by the almighty algorithm or otherwise by normal people, real people, friends, family, internet people, that kind of thing. And indeed, this one comes from an internet person. Another shout out for Steve's Tech Shed. I know I've mentioned him a few times in recent rambles, so thank you ever so much, Steve, for sending this to me and posting it on my Discord server. I found this absolutely fascinating. And the reason for that is because if you think back a few rambles, I spent my 40th birthday in London, and I actually did a review of the weekend and of all of the places that we went, and that actually went down really well, and people seemed to really appreciate my recommendations and all of that kind of stuff. And one of the places we went to was the Novelty Automation Museum, which is this museum full of weird and wonderful machines, games and interactive things that have been built by one man, a chap called Tim Hunkin. And he's been doing this for years and years, and he's got all these weird, like satirical machines and kind of political commentary and that kind of thing, all wrapped up in a very kind of sarcastic British way, but all kind of fun and interactive. And if you want to know a bit more about that, of course, I'll link to that previous ramble so you can go and have a listen to that part again, my thoughts on the whole thing. But one thing I didn't realise was the fact that the guy that builds all of these things has a YouTube channel and actually shows the build process and talks about the history behind them and the thinking behind them and how they're kind of working in this setting. And it's an absolutely wonderful thing. So, yeah, this video was posted on my Discord by Steve, like I say. And it's about one of the games that I actually played on that weekend, which is called iZombie. And it's a it's like a basically it's a simulator where you're walking down a street and you've got all of these people sort of staring at their phones, not looking where they're going, and you have to basically kind of dodge them as you walk down the street. And you walk up to this thing and it's got like handles on the side. It's a wonderfully Wallace and Gromit kind of contraption. Loads of fun to play. The whole museum is like this. It is loads of fun. And yeah, he talks about how he kind of built the machine, how it all works, all the kind of electronics. Of course, it's all servos and relays and actuators and all that wonderful stuff. Of course, there's it's kind of all like electromechanical stuff as well. And yeah, just the political commentary behind the machine and what kind of inspired him to build it. Really, really great video. I mean, it's only 20 minutes, so well worth checking out. But yeah, I had no idea that the guy even had a channel, let alone the fact that he'd covered all of these things on it. So I am working my way through them, learning all the backstory behind all of these wonderful things that he's built. And I recommend that you do the same, even if you've not been to the museum. It's a fantastic way to kind of experience his work and his mindset. And I can highly recommend it. And it's a great one to start with as well, because let's face it, people addicted to their phones is something that we're all familiar with and something that we've all had to deal with at some point or another. So that's the video of the week, and yeah, hope you enjoy. So just a very quick one to end on, but I couldn't let this one pass me by for reasons that will hopefully become obvious very shortly. And this is a story that this reminded me of my old Atari ST, which of course I've already been... Very reminiscent of that wonderful old machine in this ramble, but I'm going to mention it again. And the reason for that was because back in 1991, when we got that, it was one of the packs. The Atari ST was well known for its pack-in games, some fantastic packs that they put together with some really classic games. And the one that we got was called the Discovery Extra Pack, and it came with Final Fight, and it came with a fiendishly difficult platformer called Nine Lives. It came with an amazing arcade conversion called Escape from the Planet of the Robot Monsters, which isn't that well known as an arcade game, but it's absolutely brilliant, definitely well worth checking out. One of my favourite games. One of the games that came with it was the original SimCity. And if you've owned any kind of computer at any point in the past 30-odd years, I think it's fair to say that you've probably played a version of SimCity. And this original top-down 2D version was probably the best known. It was released on pretty much every single platform under the sun over the years, a game that you'll be very familiar with. Now, unfortunately, this isn't a story about a new version of SimCity, much as I would love it to be. No, this is a story about the company that published that game on the Atari ST. And you may have seen the logo flash up. If you're watching this on YouTube, you may have seen the logo. There it is. Bottom right-hand corner, and I very, very distinctly remember this rainbow armadillo logo when I was a kid. I thought it was like walking across the desert behind the sign in this title screen. Of course, Infogrames, the French game publisher. I hope I'm saying that right. I've always said Infogrames, and when I found out that they were French, that kind of cemented it in my mind that that was the correct pronunciation. I've heard people say Infogrames. I don't think that's right. I haven't checked. This is just a ramble. I don't really do all that much background research, but Infogrames is the big story this week, because, of course, Atari are bringing them back. Now, if you know anything at all about the current incarnation of Atari and about the history of the company, you'll know that Infogrames acquired the Atari brand and logo and IP and stuff at some point. So the company that is actually currently trading as Atari is actually Infogrames, the old French game publisher from back in the day, who have their own kind of quite interesting story. This is probably something I could do a video about at some point. But they decided to rebrand it as Atari because that was the better known brand. They've been doing quite well. It's quite strange to say, but they've actually not done a bad job of bringing it back as a brand, I don't think. And they've decided to bring their old brand Infogrames back as well as a publisher, because why not? Why not? And yeah, iconic logo, iconic name. And they've purchased the rights to a game, which is called Totally Reliable Delivery Service. And it's made by Tiny Build LLC, first released in 2019. It's an all-ages multiplayer send-up of the package delivery world, set in an open sandbox full of absurd gadgets, unlikely delivery vehicles, and a healthy dose of chaos. Looks a bit like Overcooked and those kind of games, which yeah, might be worth checking out. I had a lot of fun playing through those games with Catherine over lockdown, over those dark times. So yeah, the Infogrames logo and name are coming back as a publisher, as part of Atari. They're releasing Totally Reliable Delivery Service, a five-year-old game on the Switch, the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, Xbox blah, 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 PC, Steam, and on the Epic Games Store. Wow, that ties into another story from earlier as well, doesn't it? It's almost like I plan these things. And there's a bit, not a lot of information, but there is this page here on the Atari website, which of course I'll link to, which has a bit of a history of the brand and history of the brand logo. And they've even got that old one that I remember from SimCity. So that's really nice, really nostalgic. I had quite a few other games published by them back in the day. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but that logo is definitely something that I remember. And I remember them being around in the early 2000s and publishing like PC games and stuff like that. So nice little story that just to end on. And I hope you've enjoyed this week's ramble. Thank you ever so much for joining me. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel if you enjoy it, or follow us on your favourite podcasting platform. And indeed, go and check out my main channel, Control Alt Reese, because I need all the views that I can get to pay for these silly desks and things. So thank you ever so much once more for joining me. I do really appreciate it. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend. And I shall catch you when the next one goes out. So all that's left is for me to say goodbye, so I won't hesitate any longer. And yeah, let's do that. Bye.